BFBS.
The Forces Station.
Taking the leap to leave the Forces can present you with a weight of emotions from excitement, trepidation, apprehension, and even the opportunity to do something different. Overall, the transition to Civvy Street can be a daunting prospect, but there is life after service, and BFBS, the Forces Station, have been speaking to those that have served and since moved on to fulfil a new career.
BFBS.
The Forces Station.
First, we find out about Dean Hollins, who has gone from the military, signing up at the tender age of 16 and fulfilling a military career in various locations. After leaving, Dean joined the police and is now a military historian and published author.
I actually left the army on the Tuesday, and on the Thursday of that week, I joined Surrey Police. So my transition was quite quick. I didn't actually dip into Civilian Street as such, because I went into another organisation that was uniform, disciplined, had a hierarchy and a structure, which I recognised. But what I did realise was, when I was doing my basic training down in Ashford, it had to go away on a four-month course, that actually the skills and the experience and knowledge that I'd gained in the army stood me head and shoulders above the other recruits, most of them in terms of getting used to that life of regimented discipline hierarchy. Unless they were coming from a military background, most of them didn't have that. If you were a military personnel, you went to a room with three other civilians who had no idea whatsoever of what they were doing. I turned up on day one carrying an ironing board and an iron, and everybody laughed at me until the evening when they're all queuing down the corridor trying to use the one iron and the one ironing board that the Ashford Police College had provided for them. Little things like that. And I took a duvet with me as well, because I knew they were making bed blocks. For those of you old enough to remember bed blocks, they made those, and I picked mine up, placed it on the side and put a duvet on. But the next day I showed them all how to do it, and then the following week they had their own ironing boards, they had their own duvets, and I was showing them how to ball boots and do all those sort of things that come second nature to me, but they were struggling at, and they helped me in areas where I wasn't probably particularly strong. But throughout my whole police service, I spent 26 years with Surrey Police, my military training held me in such good stead on so many different occasions. Even at the time when I didn't realise it was going to help me, it did. And on reflection, and when I review incidents that I've been involved in, had it not been for my military training, I don't know how I would have responded. Whether it was public order, whether it was just getting out in the community and working and dealing with community issues, my military training gave me that bearing. 26 years Surrey Police, then 4 years ago I retired, and I made a second transition, and I'm actually finding I'm doing all the things that I ever wanted to do, because yes, the police service gave me a great career. The army actually was the foundation of that. The success that I had within the police service, I put down to the training and experiences that I had in the army. 8 years, by comparison, is probably not a long period of time to serve compared to some, but it was enough that actually it forged my path going forward in life, to the point now where everything I do is still based on my military training, my military principles, the military doctrines that I learned. The successes that I've had in my life, I put thoroughly down to my time in the army.
BFBS. The Forces Station.
Mick Doe was desperate to join the Navy after seeing the Falklands War televised when he was just 14. He waited until he was old enough and joined HMS Edinburgh in 1985. Jack Adolfi caught up with Mick, who had a 13-year successful career. He was then able to turn his passion for logistics and the movement of goods and services into a full-time career.
Logistics is common sense. You are moving something from A to B as efficiently as you can, and you need to be a pretty clear decision maker. You need to be quite considered under pressure, and you need to work really closely as a team. And if you take all of those attributes, a military background is an obvious breeding ground for people to come into logistics, because that's what we do. We make decisions under pressure, we work well in teams, and we consider consequences, and we have a degree of common sense.
Just going back to 1997, can you maybe explain that initial transition period going from service and then straight out to Civvy Street?
I think for back in 97 is very different than it is now. When I came out, I effectively returned from a Persian Gulf tour, didn't have a job to come out to. It was quite a daunting process because I'd never worked in Civvy Street. I joined the services when I was 16.
Next question, can you just outline your current role, what you do from a day-to-day basis?
I'm Transport Operations Director at Clipper Logistics, and it works in all aspects of retail fashion. The part that I'm responsible for is we have a fleet of about 500 vehicles And what we do for many of the high street retail brands is we will move stock from their warehouses into their stores.
Now you're very much got your own career and the military is in the past. What advice would you give to someone planning on leaving the military this year?
I think that there are key things that you need to do. You have to understand what industry or what role you're looking for. You need to understand whether you've got the right skills that can achieve your dream job. Build a network. It's okay having mates and people in Civvy Street and stuff like that, but there are professional websites such as LinkedIn, which is a professional Facebook and stuff like that. Seek help from people like myself that have been out and have built a second career. So understand where you want to go. Make sure you've got the skill set for it. Build a network around that and ensure your CV demonstrates your skills.
BFBS, the Forces Station.
Our next focus is on James Wilsu, who was an intelligence officer in the RAF and completed 5 operational tours and then left the Forces after 8 years to work as a civil servant. He then ventured down a completely new path and began selling rugs imported from Afghanistan. Chris Keane went to his shop in Hebden Bridge to find out more.
Well, a friend of mine saw one of the rugs that I had from my tour on the floor at home. I managed to send back quite a few when I was there. It was 2003, so there was no social media, no internet, and I thought, well, you know, if I buy now, this is the only chance I'm going to get. So we'd bought quite a few. He saw the rug on the floor, and he said, could you get me one? Could you find the guy you bought that rug from? And I said, oh, you know, I might be able to now. And he said, well, if you can get one, I'd get 10. It then took me about 3 months on social media, Google, Facebook, to track down our interpreter we used at the time. This is 13 years on, don't forget. But eventually I tracked down Rafi, the guy I used to buy my rugs from, the guy that most of us trusted out there. We Skyped, and you know, from then we decided on, you know, I'd buy a few rugs, I'd send him some money, he tried to figure out the postage, I was trying to figure out the UK imports. That initial phone call became, within 3 months, a business with the door open and trading.
So having never done anything like this before, was it hard for you to kind of get your head around and initially start a business?
It is and it isn't. It can be as complicated as you want to make it, but there's a couple of basic things you need to do, you know. You need your supply, so you need to know where you're getting your stuff from. You need to have a retail space. You need a till and stock control systems and a chip and pin machine and a bank account, you know. It's all the things you think you need. There's then insurance and a few other things like that on top, but it was less complicated than I thought.
And I know that through your business, you also give back to Afghan families to help them out. Do you ever hear from the families, from the recipients, to let you know how they're doing and what they might be doing with your money?
Once or twice. And after about 8-9 months of trading, Rafi, the guy I buy my rugs from, sent me a message saying, James, I don't think you realise how many families you're supporting here in Mazar-i-Sharif. And that was both wonderful to hear, but also really quite daunting, quite worrying, because it's that extra layer of responsibility now to maintain what we're doing. But it's a really nice thing to hear. We hear it every now and again.
Just going back to the Forces again then, would you say that having been in the Forces and having gained the skills whilst you were in have helped along the way with this new life and with your new venture?
Yes, definitely. It's just a mindset. We try to prepare the business for worst case scenarios, and 5 months after we opened the door we were wiped out by the Boxing Day floods, but we were able to weather that storm. We recovered, we were back open within 3 months, but also we've set up the structure of the business that when things happen like the Brexit vote, which killed the exchange rate, because we buy in the dollar, so it went from 1.6 to 1.1, we're just about maintaining sort of some kind of standard sort of output during that weird period that we've had for the last 18 months, which is good, because if we can survive that going forward, we'll blossom in the future. So it's that military mindset of preparing for worst case scenario. And also being detached from it, you know, you've got to step back. I've got to listen to my staff. It's like having a small team that you're responsible for. You listen to their input. You take on board all the positives. You identify the negatives. But you've also got to keep a little bit distant. You've got to keep back from it so you can make reasonable decisions, not emotional decisions over the way the business goes. And if it's going to go wrong, you have to accept that sometimes things go wrong.
And finally then, James, obviously this has all worked out for you, big success story, but for people who are maybe a bit nervous, just about to leave the Forces, getting back into Civvy Street, what advice would you give them? What would you say to them?
Don't be scared, you know, it's a positive step. It's as positive as you want to make it. It is a bit weird readjusting. It's just like coming back from a tour. You've got to readjust after every tour. It's the same kind of process. But the biggest thing that military personnel are really bad at is selling themselves, because it's not something you do when you serve. And it's taken me years to realize I've got to actually sell myself and actually brag about the successes that we have in order for the business to blossom. So that's a hard thing, but everything else, it comes naturally. It doesn't happen quickly. The initial shock of not wearing uniform wears off after a few weeks.
This is BFBS, BFBS. The Forces Station.
Life after service, and we find Commissioned Officer Fiona Galbraith serving a 24 career in the Intelligence Corps. After Army life, she's the brainchild of Ruralink, who work with rural businesses and the land-based communities to develop sustainable careers, particularly to ex-military staff. Fiona speaks to Richard Hatch and Verity Gear.
When I was serving overseas, I had a couple of occasions where I realised that I really missed the seasons and the lands. And one of the stories I like to tell is coming back from Bosnia, where, of course, there was a threat of mines and IEDs, and we couldn't leave the tarmac. And I very much remember as a young officer coming back and standing in my parents' garden, taking my shoes and socks off and just wiggling my feet in the grass and thinking, yeah, this is what home feels like. Oh. And it was a wonderful thing. And, of course, so many other people find that just being out in nature is really good for everyone's general well-being.
So how did you make that move from the forces into agriculture?
I do have a family background, and I grew up on a vineyard in East Kent, and that obviously put the idea into my head. But actually, when I did my own estimate, if you like, of what I wanted to do when I left, it came down to two things: that I wanted to have some connection with the land, and I wanted to work with people and developing people. And those two strands eventually came together into what I do now. So I went to the Royal Agricultural University for a year, did a master's degree there, really for my own transition plan to help me demilitarise myself a bit. And then during that time became aware of just how difficult it is for military people to move into the land-based sector, which is extraordinary because there's so many synergies.
Just give us a little idea. I mean, excuse my ignorance, but the kinds of jobs that are available in agriculture.
In agriculture, you can do everything, of course, from driving a tractor up and down a field to working with stock, but there are also an awful lot of management opportunities. One of the key things that's happening across the agriculture and the wider outdoor sector at the moment is that because of labour shortages, because of increases in technology, a lot of large service companies are being formed that support the core, the agricultural businesses, the farming businesses. And so there are needs for project managers, for logistics experts. In precision agriculture, there's a need for data analysts to work out what drones and ground-based robots are seeing as they crawl around our farms. Pretty much every skill you can pick up in the military has an application in the rural sector.
That's amazing. So what do you offer at Ruralink? So
there's two things we do. The first one is we facilitate a networking group called the Ruralist. It's a really friendly, relaxed, all ranks, all rates group that meets once a month, currently in Cirencester, but this year we're going to expand it to other centres around the country. And there people come together. We have a guest speaker that hopefully inspires people as to the different types of careers that are available. And then we support each other. We give each other our best practice. We help each other, if that's advice on a CV, advice on how to attend a networking group, contact. We support each other. And that's the Ruralist, and people can find that, and they're very welcome to come along. The other thing we do is we're setting up a series of bespoke short courses to help people move laterally from whatever level they're at in the forces now to deliver at the same level in the rural sector. They just need that little 10% of context, of jargon, a bit of experience, and all those courses are very experiential, so they go into companies and firms in the rural sector to gain that experience and make those networks personally.
BFBS, the Forces Station.
Former airman David Smith is the owner of CrossFit Spitfire in his hometown of Norwich. It would be many years before David would discover the worldwide fitness phenomenon that changed his life. He'd initially begun work in the automotive industry and then joined the RAF. To tell his story, David has been speaking with Hal Stewart.
Back in 2002, joined the Royal Air Force and was lucky enough to go through Cranwell, get commissions, pop out as an engineering officer on the other side, then did a number of tours throughout the service. So I did a short service commission, which was 6 years, and picking up along the way obviously a lot of skills as well, which at the time I wasn't really sure how to use other than in the context of the Air Force. But the training is second to none. It's actually opened up a whole wonderful opportunity for the rest of my life.
You like sport. You were a competitive sprinter and hurdler, and then somehow and on some date you first got introduced to CrossFit.
We actually started doing a little bit out in Afghan when we were there with a good friend of mine, an intelligence officer at the time. I've always been involved in fitness throughout my life, and it's been an absolute passion as well to try and not necessarily keep myself in shape, but also to kind of encourage others to do so. So all friends and family, but you know, I've been pushing them towards just keeping generally fit and healthy throughout their whole life, and it is, you know, aimed at the whole lifetime. But for me, CrossFit came about after I left the Air Force. It was a good few years working again as an engineer for a local company. An opportunity came up, and actually a friend of mine who worked in another CrossFit gym down south said to me, you've got a lot of skills and you're very personable as well and you like coaching. He said, have you thought about opening up your own gym? I picked up the phone and I called X Forces at the time, which for me was the best thing probably I've ever done, and found a mentor through them and through my colleague, and gave me the confidence to actually then set up my own business.
CrossFit Spitfire. Incredible to set that up. How long has it been going now?
So it's been going successfully for 3.5 years.
Brilliant.
I've set it up. It's a wonderful thing. It's my baby.
And you've been recognised. Tell me about the Director's Special Award at the Soldiering On Awards. That was in 2018.
Yeah, it was an absolute privilege and very humbling experience to receive that, and completely out of the blue as well, through the association with X Forces as a beneficiary.
An ambassador as well.
And subsequently, yeah, now after that, as an ambassador for East Anglia, which was obviously an amazing privilege as well. The Director's Award, I was actually put forward for a community award. We made the top three, which was fantastic. Went to look the House of Lords for reception and then made it to the final. Probably one of the most humbling experiences sitting there when you've got all of these nominees, prize winners as well, of course, and they go through the individual stories. And I felt like I didn't deserve to be there at all.
But everyone feels like that.
Exactly. We were there for recognition of the impact we've had on the local community, mainly military veteran community. To receive the Director's Award directly was amazing. And that was mainly for my personal contribution to help others, inspire them, kind of get them going, starting their own business. Obviously, you know, veterans across the piece, for whatever background, whatever force they're in, and across the whole country. You know, when I was in the Air Force, I didn't coach fitness, I didn't coach driving and stuff like that at all. But you're given the skill sets, you just don't know it perhaps. And so it's really important to speak to people like us within X Forces or whatever like that, and say, we can draw out those qualities from within you. So you're probably an amazing leader, or, you know, a team player. Well, that's perfectly representable in the civilian world, but particularly as in your own business. You can make communication skills, the fact that, you know, you're clear, concise, you're brief, you're punchy, you're direct, but you've got the wherewithal to have a big dollop of common sense as well. And then that goes a long, long way, I think. They prepare you, the military, so well for this. I would recommend to anybody to get cracking on it if they're so inclined to do so.
Yeah. That's great advice for anyone who's served and wants to turn their passion into their business. What about the challenges for X-Forces re-entering civilian life and trying to find employment? Did you come up against any barriers?
Well,
or have you seen
it was
any?
More in my own head, if anything else. It's really difficult because all of a sudden you've come out of this almost cotton wool environment where you're wrapped up and you've got your friends, your family there and everything else, and you know your job, you're within that spec of it, and you're provided with a lot of welfare support and facilities and everything else, and all of a sudden that's cut off and you've got to find your own way. The only way to really survive that, I think, is to talk, to speak to others. And I think if you've got the inclination to want to set up your own business, speak to someone, so speak to a mentor perhaps. You may come up across hurdles, you will do, and you will be knocked down, you'll be beaten back, and you and not everything will go according to plan, but this is where you excel as being ex-military, because failure is not an option. You're going to get back up, you're going to rise, you're going to go above it, you're going to learn, move on, and be reactive to that. But also, it can be sometimes one of our weaknesses as well, where you're so stuck in that mindset and almost stubborn, you know, you have to open your mind a little bit and soften off a little bit, of course, to actually listen to everybody and everything around you, because there's an awful lot of experience out there to absorb.
The Forces Station.
This is BFBS.
Joining up as a Royal Marine in 2003, Daryl Bowden served 8 years, including deployments to Afghanistan, the US, Canada, and the Caribbean. Since leaving life as a Marine, his move to Civvy Street sees him work in anti-piracy, Formula One, several motoring companies, and he's now a senior procurement manager at Eurostar. Daryl left the Marines in 2010, and he speaks to Tim Humphreys.
I thought I was ready to leave. I was very fortunate that I fell straight into a job in anti-piracy. So I was literally out the gates at Poole on the Friday and deploying on my first. operation, shall we say, or deployment with an anti-piracy company on the Wednesday. So there wasn't really a transition, because for those of you who know, it's just like being in the Royal Marines but without the green suit. That was very easy, a very easy transition, because I was around people going through the same thing.
You've had a number of different roles as a civilian. Just give us an outline of your career so far.
This is where I'm going to sound like a right arrogant fool. I was very, very fortunate with my career since I left the Royal Marines. And I went to do anti-piracy. I then landed a job in Formula One for Mercedes. Then I made a career move which was devastating to my career, which went wrong, which was completely falling out of Formula One. But then I was lucky enough to get a job at Cosworth, and then moved on from Cosworth to Aston Martin, and then on to Williams F1. And now I work for Eurostar in London as a senior procurement manager. I am in charge of a budget of £350 million a year. Lots of responsibility there, but it's enjoyable.
And so what are some of the skills, some of the attributes that you learn in uniform in the military that you use day to day in Eurostar?
One of the big key things is mannerisms, having respect. I don't want to come across too cliche, but you tell it to work on time, or you don't mind coming in early. If there's a job to be done at the end of the day and you're going to miss one train and it's going to put an hour onto your day, it doesn't bother you, you're here to get the job done. I've definitely brought that across. And how I deal with people is a good one. Believe it or not, from a Royal Marine and from a Forces guy and Forces guys that I've dealt with, it's surprising how much empathy you have for other people. People have this persona of always a big Royal Marine, you know, but the fact of the matter is you don't judge people book by the cover, you judge people by themselves. And I think that's very much transferable. I know it's quite difficult to some of the civilian processes, but adapt and overcome, and that's one thing that I brought with me.
And I know that in your civilian role at Eurostar and generally in your career, you've come across others who have come out of uniform just into the next career on Civvy Street. What do you think the attitudes are around employers at the moment when it comes to employing former forces?
The attitudes are definitely changing, and I think people's perception of guys and girls are changing. I would say now it's more an individual process, and I would say now that resettlements and things are getting better, that it's easier for people to transition. However, I still think there is a stigma in certain areas. When I speak to people and I say, oh, how on earth did you land up in Formula One? I said, well, I wasn't afraid to knock on that door. And that is one thing I would suggest to people is, aim for the moon, you miss, you're going to be in the stars. You know, knock on them doors, you know, don't think, oh, I'm leaving as a crow or whatever from the forces and you're not going to get anywhere. There's opportunities out there. You just got to find your direction and apply yourself to it.
And finally, for those listening in uniform, in service at the moment and looking to transition out of the military, what piece of advice would you give?
Don't be scared. And that's a bit cheesy. You went for your basic training, you deployed to operations, whether it be in Afghanistan or humanitarian aid. You've done some really hard stuff. What you have to remember is you might be made a show pony and you started a company. Bear with it. Don't bite. You know, just prove what you're worth and don't be afraid to ask questions.
Our next candidate is former Essex-based able seaman Kevin Barth, and there hasn't just been life after service, there's been chocolate spread. From an idea in the kitchen sparked off by fears for his children's health, Kevin has found success producing a new concept in sweet tooth spreads. But chocolate and jam weren't Kevin's first reason to leave the forces.
I was felt that when I was based in Gibraltar, I was kind of trained on the IT systems and then realised how much people were earning in Civvy Street doing the same role. So I did my 18 months notice and then left and worked on IT systems for a while.
How did you come to be standing in your kitchen thinking, I know, I'll make spreads for a living?
Yeah, it's a nice easy transition, isn't it? Royal Navy through to chocolate spread. It's inspired by our children, really. We was sitting here in this room having pancakes one Saturday morning. The children were having hazelnut chocolate spread. And I kind of glimpsed at the side of the jar and looked at the sugar content and it said 58 grams per 100. So I kind of, that can't be right. That's nearly 60% sugar in that jar. We looked for a healthy alternative. We looked for a low sugar, reduced sugar one. We thought this was about 4 years ago. Thought I was bound to find one. We couldn't find one. We kind of done a bit more research and realised, not surprisingly, the biggest consumers of chocolate spreads are children. but every single supermarket shelf, all the chocolate spreads are ran full of sugar. So we knew there was a huge gap in the market there for a healthier, low-sugar chocolate spread. So we kind of come up with a recipe, made it ourselves for a little while, and then kind of pitched it and took it to kind of farmers markets and then food shows, and it was getting a bit more momentum. So we went to a bigger manufacturer to see if they could do our recipe, and they could. And then we kind of pitched it to major retailers. Our core products are our hazelnut chocolate spread and our milk chocolate spread. No added sugar, so we take all the sugar out. And we use a naturally plant-based sweetener called maltitol. It's a bit similar to stevia. People probably have heard of more of a stevia, plant-based sweeteners. But with stevia, it left a kind of, in chocolate spread, left kind of a licorice aftertaste, which wasn't great. So obviously kids are going to be eating this product, so you know they're honest and brutally honest. So we needed a great tasting product that tasted very similar to the other chocolate spreads on the market. So we use maltitol, and it doesn't have, it makes it more creamy, actually. It's nice and smooth. There's no aftertaste. You can kind of melt it down and put it into hot chocolate to make hot chocolate with it and milkshakes and bake with it. So it's very versatile, as well as obviously put it on your pancakes.
Is it okay for vegans?
They're suitable for vegetarians, but this year, this is an exclusive for you. We've pitched the two vegan spreads to a few supermarkets, and they're very keen, actually. And there's one with no nuts as well. All our products are gluten-free. We're pitching to schools at the moment to try and make chocolate brownies with our chocolate spread, so there's no added sugar chocolate brownies within schools.
And what was it about your service life which gave you the skill set to tackle this great responsibility and brave adventure?
In the services, they give you an order and you get on with it. So I suppose when you're running your own business, you've got to get on with it. You've got to have a thick skin. When you're running your own business and pitching your business to people, you're going to get a lot of no's. You think when you come at your business idea, everyone's going to say yes, like I did. I think it's a no-brainer and still do to retailers. But there are retailers that you've got to have a good argument and passionate about your product. And I think it's that inner drive that the forces teach as well, in the drive to kind of succeed. Even thinking back to basic training when you first join, get a skinhead and you think, look, this all this fitness. And do you think, I need to just get through this? So it's that kind of inner drive to succeed and get through things. And if you're left alone to do stuff, you've got to do it. You've got to see it through to the end. Whatever you've been told or instructed to do, then you see that through to the end.
Liz Mullen chatting to Kevin Bath, and now making me feel very hungry.
BFBS. The Forces Station.
Sport plays a huge part in Forces' life. And for one former Army officer, the setting of sports goals helped her and others go from strength to strength since leaving Forces' life. Despite medical challenges, Sally Orange, a former major who served 22 years in the Royal Army Medical Corps, led Mind Over Matter, the first ever female team of 8 wounded, injured and 6 service personnel and civilians in the race across America. Sally speaks to Tim Humphreys about her life after service.
I'd seen a couple of male teams do the challenge and recognised that there were no females in that at all, so wanted to show that actually females could do that at all, and that's really where it was born from.
And for you as organiser, how challenging was that time, pulling everything together?
It was incredibly difficult. I think I probably underestimated exactly what was required. The need to get over £100,000 of funding was probably the biggest challenge, and also all of the team members were located geographically in different places in the country. And although there was just 8 riders, we had a support crew of 11 as well. So in fact, it was 19 people that went over to America. I had the assistance of Leadership Challenges, which was, I really would have struggled without them.
So you were the first all-women's team, and you led those in the cycle. You did the cycle 3,000-plus miles in just 8 days. What was the feeling throughout those 8 days from your team of cyclists?
I think it was a real roller coaster, if I'm completely honest. There was, apprehension. It had never been done before. The getting into the routine and realising we've just got up our first mountain range, and the euphoria of that, but there's extreme sleep deprivation on this challenge, so that really took its toll. And we did have to come together and use the strengths and weaknesses of not just the individuals but also the bikes, and then just crossing that finish line was I think it was total, you know, astounding and amazing that we'd actually managed to do it.
Looking back, just how proud are you of that team, of your Mind Over Matter project?
The name Mind Over Matter was what really had to come into play. And the main aim of the project was really to show others that with determination, commitment, so much can be achieved.
So in what ways did this project benefit other service leavers going forward?
A part of the project that I wanted to have an angle at was research, really. So we were very fortunate to have Professor David Shearer from the University of South Wales, who is a professor in sports psychology. And what he did was research pre, during and post-challenge to really find out the impact of the project it had on the individuals and their families as well. That will be used for other veterans to showcase what they can take on.
How do the skills, the experiences gained through sport and through service life transfer for those who have left the forces and now as they work on Civvy Street?
A multitude of qualities. The teamwork, the communication, they were absolutely the vital. For me, the organisational skills, the planning skills that have been learnt and trained. Really, it would have been very difficult had we not have had those skills. And it was nice to interact those with civilians as well. So it was a great way of showing how transition works between veterans and civilians in future life. So it was win-win all round, really.
BFBS, the Forces Station.
Ex-Royal Signaller and Royal Highland Fusilier, Mark Laird has had a varied career since leaving the Army in 1999. He is now the owner and director of technology company Lairds of Troon. Mark told Jim Gellatley how his transition of life after service has gone.
I think every day when you're in the military, you're always on the edge. It's like your commanding officer can make a phone call and you're being deployed within 24 hours notice to move. Now, when you're running a business, every day is different. And that's the key for me. It's never the same. It's different clients, it's different customers, it's different problems and challenges. And that really keeps me on edge, which I think is a good thing.
Having worked in communications in the Army with the signals, Lairds of Troon very much involved with communication as well. What does the company do?
We build infrastructures in houses or commercial properties that let you add to the mix. It can be anything from cinema to audio systems to visual displays, presentations, everything in between. It's from a basic computer network with a couple of PCs on it to something as big as a wedding venue with blinds and heating and sliding doors and projectors and audio systems and bands. I design the systems, liaise with the clients, the architects, and then we come in and we install the wiring, which is the infrastructure, all the technology and the cool gadgets, and then we'll sit with the client thereafter to show them how to use it and then give them continued support for however long they need us.
Would you say there's a direct link to the skills that you gained when you were serving?
Absolutely. From being responsible for millions of dollars or pounds worth of equipment, such as warriors and various other armoured infantry vehicles, we were communications experts. You get a warrior tank, we had to put the infrastructure in that tank. It was everything from soldering to setting up communications equipment, secure communications, the masts, moving it from A to B in the dark, in the rain, in the mud. So yeah, it gave us the foundation that we needed to be jack of all trades, master of none, you know. But we decided to be the mastery of our trade.
You didn't go straight from the Army into setting up Lairds of Troon. It was quite a varied career because you were also a firefighter.
Yes. Over a period of years, I found it difficult to get jobs locally. There was nothing really within earshot at the time, so with my skill set as such. So I went to university off and on. I worked for a company that was based in Essex, so I was there communications and IT guy in Scotland, so a lot, worked in a lot of MOD establishments. But I got a university education at the same time, and then I saw an opportunity within our local community to give back and join the retained fire brigade as well. Full time at university, retained firefighter with a pager, and I started my first small business as well, a computer repair company.
You're clearly not afraid of hard work.
No, it's just the more challenges you get, and the more you want to get your hands dirty, you know, just keep going, dig in. We're running a business, we're making a difference, we're paying our bills, we're giving back to our community. We're also helping other ex-service people as well in any way we can. It's great. I wouldn't change it for the world, but it certainly keeps me out of mischief. And I've got a great team behind me, and my wife supports me all the way. Don't think I'd be able to do it without her. BFBS.
The Forces Station. Life after service with Mark Evans. And Waterloo Uncovered uses archaeology to support veterans and serving military personnel. The charity has been running the first ever large-scale excavation of the Waterloo battlefield in Belgium since 2015. And Natasha Renault has been finding out more about their work and how they help veterans and military personnel with Mark, the chief executive of Waterloo Uncovered.
We have a 12-month support programme that we run, and we look to support people in areas of education, employment, transition, health and well-being, as well as recovery. We take a wide range of ages, genders, experiences, and in particular abilities and disabilities. This isn't a project just for the wounded, and I think because we understand that this is a project for people who have served, and it's a project for people who are looking to move on with their life and looking to maybe find a bit of direction or take a next step. The program that we put together that runs for 12 months, individuals who come on the project, we sit down with them and we actually work out what their goals are and what their aims are. And they're wide ranging. They could be anything from somebody who is looking to go into academia. They could be somebody who's looking to find a job, and that could be as an archaeologist. But at the same time, this could be a good opportunity for them to come and experience being in a civilian environment, which could open their eyes up to other possibilities. And for some people, it is about well-being. It is about recovery. It is about health. And to use the opportunity with us as a chance to move on, change direction, and look towards a brighter future.
What made you want to set up the charity in the first place?
I was an archaeologist at university before I decided to join the Coldstream Guards, where I served for 6 or 7 years. I was an officer, visited places like Iraq and Afghanistan. But unfortunately, when I came back from Afghanistan, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, which meant I ended up leaving the army. Ended up doing a few bits and bobs in between. But in 2014, there was an opportunity that came about to be involved with the Coldstream Guards, taking a group of their serving soldiers to the Waterloo to celebrate the bicentenary in 2015. I was with a friend of mine, Charlie Fournette, but the idea was we were looking for an activity that some of the injured guys who were in battalion at the time could come and take part in, and archaeology was what we came up with.
Waterloo Uncovered have received an award for the work they do. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We were the recipients of a Points of Light Award, which has come from the Prime Minister, to recognise the work that we've been doing to support veterans. It's a real testament to the hard work that so many people have put into the project. This is a great recognition and testament to what we've achieved.
If someone's interested in finding out more about Waterloo Uncovered and the work that you do, whereabouts can we visit?
We've got a website, which is waterloouncovered.com. In particular, I'd draw your attention to the discovery section, where we have our up-to-date information on anything to do with the dig. That's sort of when we've got excavation and work coming up, to what we're doing with the finds and the new discoveries that we're making.
Finally, former retired Navy man Nigel Lingott now runs the volunteer support group for the Portsmouth Royal Dockyard Historic Trust. The sea has always played a huge part in Nigel's life, and George Wedlake went to visit him at his home on Hayling Island near Portsmouth, which is approximately titled Sea Fever. He talked about his love of maritime history and his military career.
A team from Flagship International were just setting up a group to train foreign naval personnel here in the dockyard. And they asked if I would like the idea of going over and being their training coordinator manager. Mm. I put together the training program. And I thought, yes, I've probably done my time in the Navy. So I retired and went to work for Flagship International, as it was then, that then got bought out by Babcock. We were a team of approximately 20 newly retired Navy personnel, so we were very current in the trades that we'd been doing. And I worked with them for about 10 years, retiring finally in 2013. I've never been a golfer or that sort of thing. I did a lot of sailing in my youth, and now that I was getting towards my 60s, I thought, well, I'm not going out sailing. Brenda, my wife, basically said, don't you think you're going to sit around here all day drinking tea and reading the paper? So I went into the dockyard on the heritage side and offered my services to the Portsmouth Royal Dockyard Historical Trust. I thought to myself, I can go in once a week and polish a bit of brass, drink a lot of tea, tell stories. So that's what I did. And our remit is to keep the legacy and the history alive of Portsmouth Dockyard itself, the workforce and the buildings, this sort of thing. It's going very well. Lovely. Keeps me out of mischief.
Yeah, well, that's the idea, isn't it? So what kind of skills and experience did a career in the Navy give you that helped running the trust or the working arm of the trust?
The biggest aspect is the ability to talk to anyone at any time. I've always loved history, certainly maritime history. It's a comfort blanket that I enjoy. And you put the two together and just rattle on. And that's my main thing at the moment, I suppose. What I bring to the group is going and giving lectures and talks and talking to people who are visiting the dockyard.
So what are some of the benefits, in your opinion, of employing ex-service personnel?
It's a bit of a cliche, but it's as true now as it ever was. You have self-discipline that you are taught at an early age. And with this, I mean getting up, timekeeping, keeping yourself decent, looking decent, giving your best, looking your best. This is ingrained with the armed forces. Everything else is a bonus. If you come out at the end of it having some sort of leadership skill, the ability to talk to a group of people, it gives you lots of strengths.
Is there any advice or are there any tips or words you can offer to other, you know, ex-service personnel who are thinking about making a similar leap into going back into work or running a business or trust?
From my point of view, it's all very worthwhile. It has been a pleasure to do. It still is a pleasure to do. If they are able to find something that they like rather than have to do, I think if you have something that you're interested in and some way you can follow that line, it's all for the good. Or if it's got to be something new, then you've got to learn and put your all to it. But once you get into that kind of flow, life is just as good on the outside as it could have been on the inside. I must admit I haven't looked back, but then I'm doing exactly what I would have wanted for myself 20 years ago. I have the sea air in my blood. It kind of sums me up. You always get bad days. That's what life's like. But if you're content in yourself, that allows you to be able to face anything that gets thrown at you.
For all these stories and more information, visit forces.net/lifeafterservice.
BFBS. BFBS, the Forces Station.